Hare Krishna. So, this is probably our favorite place for the yatra every year. This is a Bhavstali of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Bhavstali is a place of his ecstasy. Right after taking sannyas, he came here to Brahmagiri Alanath with a group of his first disciples. And they were walking in the forest. And suddenly they're happy walking along chanting. All of a sudden, their Guru Maharaj became mad. This is what happens when you join the Hare Krishna movement, we hope. And he just started running into the forest, and the devotees were all very startled, and it took them a moment, and they started going after him, and they lost him. And they searched for him all day. And finally, at the end of the day, they found him right here under this same tree, lying on the ground with foam coming out of his mouth in ecstasy. They say that he saw Krishna. So it's a very, very deep place, very nice place. So we're very happy. But he said we'll have some prasadam just after this. And Maharaj will give his morning class here.
Before I stop, last year Dr. Fakir Mohan was here. I think he may come in a couple of days and give one class. But, you know, he's in his late 80s. And he's a scholar on Ariya and Bhakti and Vinod and Bhakti Siddhanta. I'm not talking because I'm just relishing the environment. All these coconut trees. And we had our own Leela here last year, 2 years ago. There was one boy born in the movement. What was his name? What? Radeya. Radeya. He's actually 20 years old, and he's the son of a Gurukuli. And he's such a far-out guy. From painting his face and running into the Jagannath Mandir, having the Panthers chase him. But it culminated in him, as he was from Hawaii, climbing up on top of one of these trees and throwing down all the coconuts for us, which absolutely freaked out the people who watched the coconut grove. So we had to pay them off. So there's all kinds of leelas over the years here. I'm just trying to find my place. Here it is. Okay. Okay. Reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Leela 13, text 13. So a very auspicious verse, 13:13. Vishvambara Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda.
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Getting addictive. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda.
Jaya
Dvaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Vishvambara Jagannate Ke Chalalite Pare Apana Ichaya Chali Karate Vihare. Lord Jagannath is the maintainer of the whole universe. Who can carry him from one place to another? The Lord moves by his own personal will just to perform his pastimes. Omigana Timarandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasade Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the part we're up to in this Jagannath Rathyatra Leela is Jagannath is now being taken from the temple by the Daityas. Means those are objects of mercy. They're from the pig seller caste. And they're, remember the, the image, Jagannath is huge. And they got him tied around the waist by ropes, and they have all these cotton pillows. And one side is pulling, and the other side is pulling. And the tension lifts him in the air, and others are behind him, and they put him on a pillow, a cotton, thick cotton pillow, and they're bursting in the air, and everyone's in ecstasy, and Lord Chaitanya's chanting in Ariya, you know, the greatest person, the greatest person. And this whole Leela is going on of trying to move Jagannath. But then the question comes, is if the deity is God, then, you know, whose will does the deity move by? And he's the maintainer of the universe. So why does he need people to do even service? And it's a very interesting phenomenon in relationship to God that out of love, God develops needs, and they're legitimate needs. Because if someone doesn't have any needs, you can't serve him. Therefore, in Shantaras, there's different relationships with God. In Shantaras, where you have full consciousness of God's immanence, it's just he's all-pervading. He's at all, and I described in Rasa, how you develop in that particular relationship, you know, you sit like this. Sometimes you put your finger up like this, making a point. And the people who worship God in that way, the Tapasvis and the Gyanis, God is so great, they don't come to Dasyaras. They don't come to service. There's no service. They just appreciate. And, you know, I was trying to explain this once of how you explain Shantaras. And I, you know, out of love, love without service. And I figured is these people are the fans of God. They just sit in the audience and applaud how great he is, but they never pick up their finger to do anything. So the question comes, what is this need that God has to be helped and moved? And he develops needs according to our love, because in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that is the ultimate principle of the universe. The Tatiya Upanishad says, Rasa Vai Sahi. He is Rasa. That's what's happening. There's an intense energy, an exchange of love between God and God's energies, especially his energy of his bliss potency, which is put in the hearts of others. He expands. Eko Bahu Sham. The one becomes many. For what purpose? For this, to participate in the pleasure of God. In other words, there's a reality that's just moving for happiness, and that happiness is love. Why? You can't really say why. Because if you say why, there must be a cause. And if there's a cause, then that's not God. Like someone says, why is God blue? Well, the reason God is blue is because to be this and this and this and this, you have to be blue. Well, who set that law that determines how God has to be? What's the nature of God? It's the nature that God wants to be. And you somehow can discover it if you are in a relationship with God. That's what bhakti means. Bhakti means it's the means for realizing the absolute reality, because the absolute reality is personal. And revelation, a person, only comes in love. You can't know someone just by analysis. You know, we have these horrible stories where someone captures someone and puts them in a dungeon, for chains them up, wants to use them for their selfish. But one thing that happens in all that time, they never know the person. Even though they have so much power, there's one thing they can't do. Their power can't understand who that person is. Tell me who you are. Love me. Reveal your heart. And that's the concept of Krishna. The concept of Krishna is when God is fully revealed in love. Sometimes we say Krishna is God when God is himself. When God is relaxed in Vrindavan, he reveals his full personality. And in that desire for experiencing service, God develops needs according to the love of the devotees. If you really love Krishna and forget to put a blanket on Krishna, the deity of Krishna, at night, Krishna can actually get a cold. It says this in Bhakti Sandarbha. You don't bathe the deities in cold water in the winter. God is actually hungry. God is actually hungry if you love God. And if you don't, he just remains stone. But this is the principle here. Because in this Leela, there will be a reciprocation with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagannath. Jagannath is his Ishtadev. In the practice of bhakti, to nourish your relationship with God, you generally gravitate to a deity which is the form of the object of your love. That's part of the practice. Some people want to have Krishna as a child, and then Krishna, they worship a deity of Baal Krishna, Krishna as a child. And another relationship, then Krishna appears as Kishore. So Jagannath is the Ishtadev of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because he has a particular internal objective that he wants to achieve. And he wants to have that love of the height of his best devotee, and the most intense feelings of separation. So therefore we can understand that what Lord Jagannath is that form that corresponds to the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to love Krishna. And what is that form? It's the form of Krishna in ecstasy, in separation from Srimati Radharani. It's exactly corresponding to the love that Krishna wants to experience in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now, I'm just going to backtrack just a little. I never gave the mantra for Parikram. So I want to give the mantra for Parikram. And this mantra from Parikram comes from the Bhagavatam, where there was Vidura. And if you know the story of the Mahabharata, there was a fratricidal war. And in that fratricidal war, this uncle who's between two nephews is kind of accused of politics. So when people have that feeling, they see through. You see the world through the lens of your own consciousness. So when you're in a political type mood in competition, you develop a certain paranoia. He develops this paranoia that his uncle is favoring or something, and he throws him out of the house. And when the uncle gets thrown out of the house, Vidura, and he gets insulted. And sometimes that's worse than being thrown out. Now, I forgot where that commentary, I think it's Jiva Goswami, says that insulting someone is worse than throwing a spear through their body. Because the spear can only pierce the body, but the words can pierce the heart. So he's insulted in such a deep way. But of course, it hurt, and he felt it. But he also had some good ideas. Good ideas means the right thoughts, the right understandings that come from sacred texts of good ideas. I went to a seminar on the Yoga Sutra that Pradyumna gave in New York, my godbrother who's a pandit. And whenever I go, he says such wonderful things that just like... So he gave this concept that, you know, the mind, you are what your mind is. You are your mind. You are what your thoughts is. And what's an evolved mind? Evolved mind has attachment for the right things and aversion for the wrong things. And an unevolved mind has attachment for the wrong things and aversion for the good things. Just like you're, you know, someone's attached to intoxication. That's a thought in their mind. They're attached to the wrong thing. And then to perform a little discipline, they're averse to that. So a highly evolved mind has good thoughts. They have vrittis or thoughts that are attracted to the right things and averse to the wrong things. And so he said, how do you get those thoughts? And he said, you need good ideas. And where do good ideas come? Good ideas come from the Shastra. And that's actually the purpose of actually satsang, to get good ideas. Because once you get the good ideas, and you act on those good ideas, then you can develop good thoughts. You can actually, when you act on a good, like there's a good idea and it's contrary to a bad thought, But if you act according to the good idea rather than the bad thought, then if you do that enough, you'll actually get a good thought. And then that carries you to perfection. I remember, again, that time. You remember when I visited Ramesh Baba and he was half-shaved, you know, and there was, and I didn't even expect to, you know. So he said, yes, may I serve you? I said, can you give me some instruction? And then he said, very nice. He said, from good thoughts come good actions. From good actions come good character. From good character come good. No, from good actions come good habits. From good habits come good character. And from good character comes the right destination. So everything starts with having the right ideas. You can't get the right objective without the right ideas. So someone like Vidura, who's so learned, he comes in that particular circumstance where he's thrown out of the house. But he had good ideas. And he had good thoughts. And what are those good thoughts? Good thoughts is that God is controlling everything. So he saw God's will in it. And he understood that this destiny that's coming to him against his will, that's actually the way God speaks to one. God can speak to one within the heart. God can speak to one through a teacher. And God can speak to one through his destiny. And generally, when we're not so good at hearing the right things, then God speaks loudly through destiny. Sometimes you can't move in the way you should have, and then God speaks loudly. So he spoke loudly. Why are you so involved in all this intrigue? You should go on pilgrimage. You should go. He's understanding. Yeah, this is what it means. I need to go on pilgrimage. And what is pilgrimage? You see, spiritual life, whatever you do, is based on absorption. If you want to change your mind, the mind has to be absorbed in something. It has to be absorbed in bhakti, the objects of devotion. It has to be absorbed. So a cultured person, he has what's called sadhana. It has times of the day where he absorbs his mind. And the mind becomes transformed. Because the mind is very malleable. And if you don't work on transforming it, you'll be looking through the world in a very skewed lens. And then it'll determine what is most psychology? It's fears and phobias. You're seeing things that are not actually real. What to speak of the ultimate goal of consciousness, which is to bring love into the heart. So first thing you have to do, you have to have times of the day. And then you have to have times of the month. We have special holidays. And what does it mean? In bhakti, it means only for Krishna. Only for Krishna. So we focus our mind. Then you have to have times of the month. We have Ekadasis. We have holy days. And then there's times of the year. And times of the year is pilgrimage. And it means absorption. So he was thinking, and Vidura gave the verse, Chure Britani Haritoshanani. I will make a vrata or vow only for the pleasure of God. Only for the pleasure of God. We don't do everything only for the pleasure of God. There's things that we have to do that are indirectly for the pleasure of God, which is what? We need to enjoy. We need to enjoy to keep the mind peaceful. The Bhagavatam says, Kamesa Nindaya Pritir Labo Jiveti Avita. It says, well, what about sense gratification? It says, take what you need. You don't live to enjoy, you enjoy to live. So there's a part of our lives that we're actually taking care of our needs and desires for the objective of making the mind peaceful in Krishna consciousness. There's some element in that. And it's legitimate. But those activities don't have the same effect in transforming the mind when you actually fully focus just on pleasing Krishna. And the first principle in focusing on just pleasing Krishna is turning your consciousness towards Krishna fully in awareness. And you do that by chanting. And it's understood that as you practice in your life, the needs and desires subside, and the aspect of one's life where one's absorbed in just the process of service and transformation becomes increased. So that has to be practiced. And it has to be practiced every day. Some point. Only for Krishna. There's a concept of asana. Asana means a seat. Upasana. It means sitting near. You have an asana. So you sit near God. How? Not in physical proximity, but in consciousness. So you have to be absorbed. So you first become absorbed something every day. Then something every month. And it's a very powerful thing. And then pilgrimage is something every year. Something every year. And it gives faith. Because faith is based on experience. You actually get faith when you actually turn your consciousness to God. And then, even in a proper culture, there should be times of the life where there's no other activity than that. There should be a retired life where one's focused completely. So pilgrimage is a really wonderful opportunity to get spiritual experience. To get some kind of faith, not just theoretical, but experiential. Faith in what? Trust in what? Trust in the right things. Faith is not just theoretical. We have faith in many things, even now. Theoretically, we say we have faith in the holy name, but experientially, what is we can quote so many verses that this is the highest thing, but do we actually see it? We don't actually have the vrittis or the thoughts, this is the best thing. So you got to develop that. So these times of pilgrimage is a very, very powerful opportunity to transform the consciousness. Mostly people in the West, when they go on vacations, it's the exact opposite. Their concept is the same. Just increase the material conception. Right? And the material conception is, I am the center, and things are objects for my enjoyment. So therefore, I want to endorse that conception to everyone else. Because the more people endorse my centeredness, the more I can control and enjoy. So what do you do on pilgrimage? You take a picture. And what is the picture? The picture is, look at me. I have the perfect environment. I'm doing Dhanur Asam in front of the Taj Mahal. So spiritual consciousness means And that's why when people come to the Dham, they come to holy places. I know I take people to Radhakund. And I feel when I take people to Radhakund, it's more like a commando raid. I get in and get out. Get something and get out before you get caught. So what do? You first go to Dhameshwar. You go to the Shiva Linga. And you pray, because Lord Shiva is the presiding deity of the false ego. And what's the false ego? The false ego is this kind of conception that I'm the center. And the real ego is I'm serving the center. So you actually pray. Because especially in a holy place, it's so God-centered. And that's the experience you want. So, this is actually the pilgrimage. It's to get experience. Experience of what? Experience of stepping out of the center and feeling beauty and love. In the 10th canto, there's a beautiful scene where Krishna is taking the cows. And it's very beautiful. He picks the most beautiful area. And even the purport says, Swakeli Sampat. What does Vrindavan mean? It has all the assets to facilitate Krishna's lila and his exchange of love. And he's sitting in the center and all the cowherd boys are surrounding him. And he's sitting in the center and he's exchanging with all of them. And then Srila Prabhupada makes a comment that they all looked very beautiful and happy. And everyone knows that. When someone is egotistical, they never look beautiful and they never look happy. And when we have that humble soul who has those eyes that sees the desires of others before their own and enters into that kind of mood, the beauty of their smile, their heart becomes reflected in their consciousness. So that's really the purpose of pilgrimage. It's to provide a facility for that type of absorption. So here actually, here, the Bengali Vaishnavas are here, and we describe what the kirtans are, and that Lord Chaitanya, he's worshiping this Jagannath deity. So as the kirtans are going, and we describe what those kirtans look like, and Lord Chaitanya at a particular time, he's dancing in every circle, and then he calls all the circles, all the devotees together, they all join together and make this tumultuous sound. And Lord Chaitanya is dancing. And then he begins to manifest what he's come for, these sentiments and feelings of ecstasy that are transforming his body. And when he's feeling that and feeling so much love, the main symptom of love is what? Service? Ecstasy. What? Selflessness. What? Humility. Surrender. Okay. What? Absorption. Now, I have to tell a Prabhupada story. I just feel I need to get the audience more alive. I'm sensitive to people's minds. So sometimes there's right answers that are wrong when it's not the answer that the person gives. So we're in Dallas, and Prabhupada called all the teachers in. And he said, so you call yourself teachers, what is the purpose of education? So then, Dayananda, And this verse was not yet out yet, because the seventh canto wasn't printed yet. He quoted this verse from the seventh canto. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Padasevanam, like this. Chanting, hearing, remembering, worship, prayers, he named all. The great answer, right? First thing is Prabhupada wanted to know how he got that verse. Prabhupada wanted to know if he, like, scooped the copyright on the book or something. Where did he get that? Because somehow he wasn't out yet. And Prabhupada said, no. Then I think Mandaleshwar, he said four things. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskaro. Worship, remember, pay obeisances. And then Prabhupada's answer is so heavy. He quoted, this is what he wanted. Guru nasasyat, swajani nasasyat, pitana sasyat. He said, don't become a guru. Guru nasasyat, don't become a father. Don't become a husband. If you can't take responsibility to liberate the person under you and make him spiritual. So you all gave good answers. I'm not Prabhupada, so I can't say my answer is going to have that kind of authority. But I can quote from Bhakti Sundar, the main symptom of love is the expression of it. You have to talk about the object of your love. And I just read a verse where that's the main symptom of bhakti. The main thing, your advancement in devotion is exactly commensurate with your desire to glorify Krishna. If you're with an advanced soul, that's what they do. They talk about spiritual subjects. That's the symptom of it. They're always glorifying. And this another story, because I just feel, I don't know, it's the travel is not so conducive to high philosophy. I got to talk practical things. I remember when our good friend, Bhurijan Prabhu, was the chairman of the GBC, the governing body commission of ISKCON. Before there was practically any email, there's no phone in Vrindavan, and he lived in a building where you shared bathrooms. He didn't have much facility, and his room was on the veranda, so anybody that actually went to the bathroom would pass his room. And he's such a deep person that people like to be with him. So they'd see him sitting there. And you know him, he's not just was managing things, but see, management you can kind of neglect and get away with it. But when you're writing, right, or editing a film, if you don't do it, it doesn't get done. Management, it can get screwed up and you can blame someone else. But when you see, he's writing books at the same time. And if you know him, it's like kind of intense. He's holding his head because there's so much pressure. And at the end of the day, and he has a family. And at the end of the day, someone comes walking into his room. Hi, you know, and sits down, you know, inevitably. Just at the moment, he wanted some time to himself. So he knew this principle, that the symptom of devotion is the desire to hear. So I saw what he would do. He would say to the person would start talking about everything in the world. And then he would say, hey, why don't we read Bhagavatam together? And the person would say, oh, actually, I got to go. I'm a little busy. So he knew the principle. He knew the principle. So that's the main symptom. So when Lord Chaitanya in the Rath Yatra is becoming overwhelmed with these incredible sentiments, it's, remember, pervasiveness, intensity, duration, And he's becoming so overwhelmed. What do you do with it? Right? Imagine like this incredible kirtan. An incredible kirtan. You know, and you see that sometimes when people don't have really a misunderstanding or something. You can't just sit. At least your hands have to clap. You have to speak. So in his ecstasy, what does Lord Chaitanya do? He begins to chant these incredible verses of the Bhagavad, and that's also one of the aspects of developing bhakti. You have a sentiment. You need that sentiment expressed in poetry specifically. Because the nature of poetry, it just doesn't tell you something. It becomes that. And it communicates it. And it's so rich in our tradition. So generally, when you're practicing bhakti and you have a feeling, you need a verse. You need a song to bring it out of the heart, which also serves the purpose of increasing it. So Lord Chaitanya is in that the Rath Yatra, and he has this incredible exchange. What do you say? The Lord doesn't move. So he's in this mood, and the mood is the mood of Radha and separation. So sometimes Lord Chaitanya goes behind the Jagannath cart, and then the cart stops. Krishna can't move. Then when he goes in front, then the cart can move. His love is so powerful. Love controls all. That's why the 25th quality of Sri Radha is that she always keeps Krishna under her control. And in fact, if God was not controlled by love, then he wouldn't be the supreme personality of Godhead. Actually, he would need counseling. He would be impersonal. People are, if you love someone, if you really give your heart to someone, what do you think when the person doesn't respond, is not affected by it, doesn't desire to serve you, isn't impelled to help you? You feel they're impersonal. So in God's supremacy, he's controlled by love. It's actually his greatest quality. So he's controlled in this way. And then Lord Chaitanya is before the cart, and welling within his heart is this incredible mood. And what is that mood? It's the esoteric mood of what this festival is about. And what this festival is about, it's about a particular lila or pastime of Krishna. When he leaves the Kurukshetra and Radha hasn't seen Krishna in 96 years, they have eternal bodies. So she comes. And when she comes and sees, and this is actually the essence of Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. When she comes and she sees Krishna, after 96 years, she's not satisfied. And the reason she's not satisfied, it's not really Krishna. Because Krishna just doesn't refer to the person. It refers to the person when fully expressing their personality. Like a person is a person, but a person is also a lover, a person is a friend, a person is a child. So she comes, and where is Krishna? Krishna is surrounded as the king, and you know, long live the king. And all these people have this love of reverence for him, and he has he's now a king, and he has the regalia. And what happens? She feels intense separation. And why does she feel intense separation? Because really, Krishna can't manifest. Her lover cannot manifest. So I copyrighted a term for that. But it can be repeated without giving me credit because that's the nature of Guru Parampara, I've heard. That Krishna means what? It means God with his guard down. When you're actually sitting in a very high position, position covers personality. When you're sitting very high and people are sitting very low, and you come and see the judge, very little of their inner self can be manifest. It's only when the person is home and lets their guard down that the full revelation of their self. So the very definition of Krishna in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is Akila Rasamrita Murti. Akila Rasamrita Murti means the full embodiment of love in all different relationships. So Krishna couldn't manifest as her lover. So she was in intense separation. And therefore, the most intense feeling of love. And she wasn't satisfied with Krishna in that situation because he couldn't manifest as her lover. He couldn't be himself. He couldn't be Krishna. One of our great acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they asked him, if there's any place in the world where you can retire and do your spiritual practices intensely near Jan Bhajan, what place would you pick? And people thought, well, Vrindavan, Radha Kund, Mayapur, non different, maybe Puri. He said Kurukshetra. And that's yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata. Whenever and wherever there's a irreligion, I appear in every millennium. You know, it's like it's the distant form, not the distant, but it's God, as you know, in Kurukshetra. So I mean, for people in this mood of Krishna, they want to think of Krishna at home. So they said Kurukshetra. Why Kurukshetra? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, because I am Radhika Dasyam. I am the servant of Radha. And that's her greatest moment of need. She's in anxiety and in the most intense love. So the whole Rathiatra festival is ultimately the form of Krishna in the Leela of Krishna, doing the exact activity. It's going back to Vrindavan. And it's such an intense mood. And that's what Krishna wanted to experience. That type of love. What does that feel like? You haven't seen your lover for 96 years and you have eternal spiritual bodies. Otherwise, there could be no rasa and rasa shastra. In that type of relationship, the objects of love have to be young. Otherwise, it's rasa-vas. It never comes to rasa. So it happens, sees. So she's feeling such love in separation and union. She's feeling such intense love. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to experience that. So now he's in the Rathiatra, and he's feeling that. He's feeling such intense feelings. You're here, Krishna, but I want you in the days of my youth. I want to take you back to Vrindavan. But there's a problem. It's so deep, and it's so esoteric, that there had not yet been written a song or poem expressing those feelings. And you needed one. If you ever, Prabhupada's disappearance day, if you ever go to a function where there's an assembly of the close associates of Prabhupada. And that feeling of separation is so intense. One year, our god sister, Sitala, showed up in Govardhan. She showed up in Govardhan for our festival. So she was there. We said, Sitala, what are you doing here? Prabhupada disappeared in Vrindavan. Why are you coming to Govardhan? She said, because that moment, this is 40 years later, that moment of Prabhupada disappearing is so painful for me that I can't be in that place on this day. The sentiments are so strong. I can't be in that place to this day. And when you have those kind of sentiments, you better have a song. Yeya nila prema dana karuna pracho. Yeya nila prema dana karuna pracho. It's Narottam Das Thakur in separation from his friend. It comes out of his heart. So on that day, we are dependent on that song. Otherwise, we do not know what to do with the feelings in our heart. We are dependent on that song. So Lord Chaitanya, he didn't have a song for that feeling. You know what he did? He used a karmi song. He used a mundane song that paralleled his feelings. The only way I can describe the shock of the devotees at Rath Yatra, although Lord Chaitanya, the shock of the devotees of Rath Yatra, the only way I can describe that is if we were in the New York Rath Yatra and all the devotees from all around the world is there, and Radhanath Swami is before the Jagannath deity, dancing as he dances very gracefully, and he becomes overwhelmed in ecstasy, and he's looking for a song to express it, and then he breaks out into, she loves you, yeah, 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 she loves you, yeah. I think the people would be, what is going on? So Lord Chaitanya broke out into a song. He broke out into a song, although it was classical Sanskrit, but the people had higher demands in that day too. So he broke out into the song about Radha's feelings. It's the same moonlight night of the month of Chaitra. The same sweet Malati breezes are blowing in the air, but I am not happy here. I want you back in the days of my youth by the river Vitasi. And that corresponded to his feelings. So Lord Chaitanya, it's a pastime that shows us how we get what we want. From the very beginning of the practices to the very end of the practices. And Puri is the end of the practices. In Lord Chaitanya's life, it's such a good example. Because even when he's doing this very intense meditation, it's at the end of his life. When you're in the Navadvip Leela, you don't hear many pastimes of people in their rooms chanting and ecstasies and things. People are doing kirtan and they're worshiping the deities. And just one more, so it's the Leela is so beautiful, such deep sentiments. And when we, as people who are aspiring for those sentiments, when we hear of this, it gives us some aspiration. Of course, that's there. How do you go there? You need to develop a mood of service. You need to develop a mood of service. Madhvacharya gives this nice comment. He said, the mood of service is like a vessel in which the liquid of all other relationships of Krishna can be poured. And when one is in the material world and has the spirit of enjoyment, the mood of service is inspired by the greatness of God, Aishwarya. So in our path, we don't forget, even in this such intimate sentiments of God, we don't forget his position and hearing about his position. I remember I was up in the Himalayas, really high up in the Himalayas, and I had a preaching party. And then we ran out of books. And then whenever you're in India, especially when you're not in Puri or Vrindavan, but even sometimes then, whenever you're in India, there's always an inspiration, at least for me. Let me go to Vrindavan. Any excuse. So I went all the way back to Vrindavan. But on the way, when you're taking these roads, I saw the Himalayas, the vast mountains of the Himalayas, peak after peak after peak. It's not when I was a kid, when I thought up at the Himalayas, I thought I was just looking up. But you're looking up, and it's just so vast. It's just so vast. I said, stop the bus. I had to get out. How great is God? And I felt what? The mood to serve. The mood to serve. It's such a scientific process. But everything is there, including the goal, the prayojana, which is actually develop intimate love for God. It makes so much sense where consciousness reaches its fruition in love. And the highest consciousness is one which is overwhelmed in love. And when you see Lord Chaitanya overwhelmed in love, the body can't contain it. And you have to express it, and you have to dance, and you have to chant. And it affects your whole body. And the deity responds. The deity is a person. And if you understand, I got this realization how to explain that in a way. And it was in relationship to a commentary on the Yoga Sutras where it explained this term vacya and vachika. Vacya means what is to be expressed, and vachika means the expression of it. And it's very clear, it says that they're exactly the same in relationship to God. What is to be expressed, God, and the expression of it, God's name, are exactly the same. And the commentary was very interesting. It described that there are certain material elements. By the design of God, there are certain material elements by the design of God that can be transformed into other things. And gave the example, it's a perfect example, of metal. Metal becomes transformed into fire without being consumed. It becomes heat and light. If you have a piece of iron in fire, it can light something. And it can burn something. It can cook something. It can illuminate something. It is fire. It's become transformed. Why? Because God created the world in this way. So in the same way, God created certain syllables that can become God. And that's called mantra. He created certain syllables. They're completely transformed into God. a certain syllable. They're syllables in an alphabet. Hare Krishna. They're syllables. But combined together, chanted by the heart of someone aspiring to serve, those syllables become energized. They become non-different. And when you focus on those syllables, you have a direct communion and experience with God. And people who do this, they get that faith. It's not just a mental repetition. There's an experience in the heart that makes one want to do it all the time. It becomes so attractive because it's God, and it does something to your heart. So in the same way, there are material elements designated in Shastra that are put in particular forms that are installed by people with pure devotion that can invoke the presence of the divine in those elements in a way that it is non-different from the divine. And therefore, within all our shastras, and people in India know it, there's reciprocation with deities. If you really, we talk, Lakshmi Nisringa asked that question about, you know, kind of the fear of vulnerability and opening your heart. Don't go before Lord Nisringadev in Mayapur. This one lady told me, she wrote a great book, it's called Lost and Found in India. She's a brilliant writer, brilliant. And she told me, you know, one of the, she went before the deities. She said, I have such heavy conditioning. I am telling you, do whatever it takes. Please remove this from my heart. I'm not going to tell you what happened because you may be discouraged from practicing Krishna consciousness. I'm not like, I keep those secrets to myself. But there's a reciprocation. And people feel it. Amazing. What? That's true. He said there's good reciprocations too. What? She said they're all good. Everything brings us closer to God that comes from God. So it's on that level, Manoranjan's in trouble. When will the Prasad come? 9:30. He's okay. We're okay. What I'll do right now is I'll stop for questions. Gita.
Inside my place, very internal. For example, there's two pindaras. There's a pindara of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but there's a very intense pindara. It's the pindara of Vishnu. So there's two pindaras. She spent 80 years of her many success life in seclusion. That's very remarkable.
He's inviting you to go to Mayapur because when Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he left home. His wife was so dedicated. She got a deity made of her husband, which became her husband. But she was still in the mood of separation, right? Wasn't it she would chant one round and put one grain of rice? What? A vow of Vishnupriya when her husband left. Every round she would chant, she put one rice, one grain of rice, and that's all she would eat. Okay. Well, that's cheating then. You get a little rice and you get a loaf of bread and some. Okay, that's right. He's right. In Bengal, there's only rice. Hari Kirtan, you had a cut? Yeah.
One of the things that things that distinguishes devotional culture and philosophy from other kinds of spiritual orientations is that we take things both metaphorically and literally. Whereas usually you hear stories such as the meeting of Radha and Krishna and Kurukshetra is only metaphor.
Yeah.
And the idea that they have perpetually youthful bodies is metaphor rather than literal. Now, earlier in your talk, you referenced a verse where you said, the one becomes many.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is to experience love.
Right.
Outside of our devotional culture, that same verse is usually used as an explanation of causality. The material world comes into existence because something without any qualities desired somehow or other to have qualities and a multiplicity of experience in order for the exchange of love to happen. And in this way, we understand the world to be a divine place. So we've got this kind of Buddhist tantric thing going on that somehow or other adds up to bhakti. And I've actually heard scholars festivals for bhakti in the yoga community actually express this idea, as opposed to the idea that the one becomes many on a spiritual level. That is to say that there are spiritual persons who are not sentenced to a period of time here in the material world. And I was wondering if you would be kind enough to elaborate on this idea that the one becoming many does not mean that there's only many in the material world, but that there are many spiritual persons in a spiritual environment that is beyond the material creation.
That's a lecture I give called Defeating Mayavadi Philosophy. And it's 2 hours. But I'll give you just one of the arguments, right? everything is illusion, right? So then the question becomes, this is from Nyayakas. The Nyayakas are the logicians, but they're theistics. So then the thing is, what is the basis of illusion? If you say illusion, then something has to be an illusion. So then you can say, well, the living entities are an illusion. But that can't be the basis of illusion, because according to your philosophy, the living entities are also an illusion. So the only conclusion you have is that Brahman must be an illusion, right? It must be the basis of illusion, right? Well, you have two problems there. One, you already have duality because you have Brahman and illusion. And also you no longer have Brahman, because Brahman means God or the greatest. And if God is an illusion, he's not the greatest. So that's some of the arguments that come. Besides the fact that if you actually have a philosophy that denies any distinction, then you have to embrace your philosophy and stand up and say, love and relationships are an absolute illusion. So I want people to embrace the consequences of what they say. And actually speaking, in philosophical terms, right, the existentialists are appreciated for their honesty. They are. I got this from our friend Professor Matthew Dasty. He said that because their philosophy comes to a point of hopelessness, right? Existential comes to the point of hopelessness, and they actually profess that suicide is a very substantial conclusion of their philosophy, that if they have integrity, they can consider embracing. So I think one thing is that people should embrace the conclusions of their philosophy. So if one actually really wants to make everything absolutely indistinct and everything illusion, then you also have a problem with speaking. And you also have a problem with Shastra. Because then what is this? Why even listen to Bhagavad Gita? Because the two bases of what's coming out are an illusion. I mean, you have a lot of problems. There's problems with every philosophy. Even the right ones have problems. But anyway, well, what would you say, Hare Kirtan?
I would pretty much repeat what you just said verbatim. But I just wanted to be clear on this idea that when we speak about eternal natures, or the idea that there's a scope for relationship on a spiritual level, that it doesn't just... that love or relationship is not dependent on the existence of a material world and our embodiment in that material world. That there are actual, real, spiritual people. We are among that population, but we've been segregated from the majority of spiritual people on account of having acquired undesirable tendencies that make us unfit association for pure spiritual souls. But just establishing this idea that we're not talking metaphorically, that there's a spiritual reality and that multiplicity of being exists in that spiritual reality. That was really what I was going with.
It's a reasonable proposition that everyone here is searching for pleasure. Everyone here understands that pleasure has to do with relationship. Then why deny it in the source of the ultimate reality? I mean, why should that be a reasonable conclusion? The reasonable conclusion, it must exist in the source. Okay, Krishna-kun, what time is it? Is he coming? Did we call him? He's close. So, Vishaka? Yes.
So, my question is,
is faith in the heart already present, or does faith come? I'm just thinking, there's a book coming out, a philosophical book coming out. The same professor, he's editing for Oxford University Press, a book called Selfhood, Agency, and Free Will in Indian Thought. And even in Vaishnav conceptions, there's sometimes even different views. What I look is definitely there's something there and there's something that comes. Both. We have a nature to serve. That seems to be our potential, our awareness, our consciousness. But for us to have the full manifestation of service is also an energy of God that comes to our heart. To energize, because in terms of faith, it says adau shraddha tata sadhu sangha bhajana kriya. It goes step by step by step by step. It increases. It starts with the level of appreciation. Right, that's the first faith. Oh, I think this is good. Then the next faith is it's so good. I like to be with those people. Then it comes to bhajan. It's so good, I want to practice the thing that gets this. So there's something in the, and then it's so good in art and everything, I want to give up those that have no value to it. And then it becomes so good that I become fixed in it. Then it's so good that I have such a flavor of, it's so pure and beautiful. And then I become addicted to it. So shraddha, faith is the seed of prema. You have some kind of seed conception that giving your life and loving God is a good thing. But the experience and the conviction of it is something that has to grow. But there is a verse, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Pasadi Pai, Bhakti Lata Beej, that by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, one gets this seed. So the conception or idea and the experience comes from a person. To what extent we have it in ourselves is also, we have something in ourselves, the desire to serve. But then there's the stage of bhava, right? And bhava is considered in the Gaudiya Vaishnava thing, something also descends at that point on the consciousness. Which, what?
Descends.
You wanted to say something? By hearing and chanting. Yeah. That's what faith is.
Yeah.
Our point is, there's a verse that says Krishna Prema is already in the heart. So Krishna, yeah, what is the faith is that experience. So somehow the experience is covered in it, and it awakens. Yes.
Yeah. Also Sukriti from past life also determines samskara in this life, and this all facilitates the realization of this also. Because past life Sukriti is a very important thing.
Okay. Thank you. And
mother. Isn't bhakti a real gift from the pure divine who plants a seed in your heart? So it may be dormant, but you have to have the association with pure divine.
We're heading into a very subtle point that's actually what we have and what we get. We definitely have something according to our tradition. And even some Vaishnava traditions think we don't have anything. But we have something. And, you know, and how that, you know, generally our idea is, you know, the nature of us is to serve God. But there's also a concept that some energy from God comes too, you know. So it's the seed and then the water comes. You know, or something like that. Lakshmi Moni?
But even that's a creepy moment. Even that's a creepy.
Yeah. 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 I would say, like, I should only be so lucky. Yeah, that's exactly it. I'm just getting it from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu when it describes the different devotees in Shantaras. It describes that the conception of God is so imminent that they don't see any need to serve. But, you know, they'll offer prayers, they'll offer respect. I think it's not a bad idea now. I mean, if you want, we can continue. Just take a little private break in the forest and people could chant. I think Prasad will come.